Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Today is Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. It's supposed to be really warm here in South Florida today. We're supposed to even possibly break records for warmth. So for all of you up there in the northern states that are still freezing their nose and their toes, come on down. Recap week is usually kind of fun because after we do a show, we think of different things that we didn't talk about, and this week is no different. I would like to, first of all, talk about what we talked on Tuesday, but I'm going to bring Shelley in first so that we can talk together about this. Good morning, Shel.
Well, good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good, dear. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I'm glad we're getting into warmer weather because it's been a little chilly here the last couple of nights.
I know. The evenings have been quite cool. Somebody let Lily out last night and left the back door open, and I walked into the living room this morning, and I was like, oh, my goodness. So,
the rest of the country must think we're such babies that we think like 60-degree weather or 65-degree weather is cold, and the rest of the country's in sub-zero degrees. They must think Floridians are
we are kind of
like
spoiled.
Babies. But
yeah, when it comes to the weather, we're pretty
whatever.
Spoiled.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, I already have my war wounds. I lived in New York almost 40 years, and battled with all the, and I lived out on Long Island, which is like just in the center of a body of war.
Mm-hmm. I think that I just lost you, Shel. I hope you're still there. My dashboard tells me you're there, but I don't hear you. Well, she'll have to probably hang up and call back. So I agree. I lived in Ithaca, New York, and I talked about that a little bit on the show today. The weather there, it's like a big valley. And when it snows, a heavy snow, it's like being in a cooler. The rest of the world starts warming up, and it takes a long time to get Ithaca warm again because the snow just sits there, you know. You're back. Mm-hmm. I hear your voice again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. First of all, I want to make a little announcement. I don't know how many people saw it on the news, but we talked a lot this past year about Caitlin Hunt. She was the young woman in Sebastian, Florida, who was having a relationship with a girl a few years younger than herself. And she got in trouble for it, and she went to court. And the judge told her that she would have to stay away from the younger girl, and she didn't. So they put her in jail in August. So she's been in jail since August, and they released her last night. She took a new plea deal, and they released her last night with her family, and they showed that on the news this morning, and she's, of course, incredibly happy. And the new plea deal is a little bit, softer, I guess is a good word. She won't have anything on her record as a sex offender or any of those kind of things. And she'll be able to, have her life again. So that was one of the most important things that I read this morning, that there won't be anything on her permanent record. So I say kudos for her. I don't think she should have ever been put in jail, but on the same token, I think she should have gotten better information from the adults in her life and made sure that she didn't, after she told the judge she wouldn't, try to see this young girl again, she should have stood by her word because at the end of the day, if you give your word to somebody, you're the only one that can give it, and you're the only one that can take it away. So that is your total and complete responsibility. The rest of it that she got in trouble for, I found to be very questionable, and we talked about that at length. But I'm happy she's home for the holidays, and I hope her life goes a lot smoother. So let's go to what we talked about on Tuesday, which was animal care and control. Have I lost you again, Shell?
No, yeah, you did, but I'm back again.
Okay.
My phone, same thing, where it's like, I can't hear you anymore, and if I hang up, it doesn't disconnect the call. It says searching, and then all of a sudden the call's back.
Oh, so, but that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I know.
So I've got a vision of you tramping through the whole house trying to search for me again. It is kind of a funny picture, you must admit.
Yes. Oh, God.
So I'm glad we're going to discuss animal care and control again because I am very, very upset about my little dog. My little dog is incredibly ill, and there doesn't seem to be a whole lot that I can do for him. Yesterday morning, I was actually afraid that we were losing him. And I've done everything that I know how to do, and when I looked it up online, there isn't much that can be done. There was a lot of advertisement from different companies that want to sell you something, but there was no real remedy for this kennel cough. It's almost like the flu, and of course we all know that we can't do anything for the flu in our own bodies. So he seems to be, his body aches, he has a runny nose, and he coughs, a very dry cough almost all the time. I got him to eat yesterday. I made him beef in gravy that was, you know, people beef. I cut it up in little tiny pieces, hand fed it to him. He ate, but then later, of course, most of it came back up. So today he's laying here on my foot, and I am doing, well, in my own way, kind of like quantum touch and a little bit of Reiki healing. He actually lets me hold him in my lap and hold his chest and his neck where he seems to have the most difficulty. And it does calm him. It does get him so he can fall asleep, and I feel his breathing return to normal. So that's the only thing I'm really doing for him now. I've given some consideration today to getting some spray saline and maybe spraying it around his nose and stuff, because that seems to be a bad place too. But this is all from being in a local animal care, I want to reinforce that word, and control, where he went because he was a bad doggy. And even though I don't think there's any other way for a dog to express the fact that he doesn't want you to do something to him other than biting you, in the real world, they can't say, excuse me, don't do that again to me, that hurt me. They can't say, that hurt, Mom, that hurt so-and-so. The only thing they can do is bite you. And that's what he did, because a little girl tried to pick him up, and I'm sorry that he bit the little girl, but I'm also sorry that, nobody was watching. So now he's very, very ill, and I'm hoping that I have him on the road to recovery, but I am still not sure about that. And when I talked to some of the powers that be, I was told that, oh, that's very normal for them to get kennel cough when they come to animal care and control. Now, does that even seem right to anybody? It's supposed to be a safe haven for pets, right? Am I right about that?
No. That's wrong. They changed the name to animal care and control and things like that throughout many areas of the country. But what it is it's the dog pound. That's mm-hmm. what it is. Now, they've tried to make it more friendly to the community because they were trying to have people participate in programs. Let's put it this way. It's a money-making organization. They charge for everything they do. They also subsidized by the government, all right? They have funding problems like everybody else, like schools and stuff like that. One of the reasons I shut my ferret rescue down was because animal care and control just to briefly explain to you how the rescue got started, Animal Care and Control was always euthanizing ferrets because they didn't do anything with them. They didn't adopt them out. They didn't house them. So if somebody brought a ferret to Animal Care and Control, it got put down. It could have been a baby. It could have been a perfectly healthy, docile, sweet, playful baby, and it was getting euthanized. So my sister started a rescue at her house, and she started taking them from Animal Care and Control, gave them her number, and actually Animal Care and Control was the one who had designated my sister a rescue, because every time they got a ferret, then they'd call her, and she'd come and get it, and then it would become part of the rescue. And we really didn't turn it into a rescue operation with formal adoptions and all that until I came down from New York. And then my sister and I worked together. I got us our 501c3 and all that. But then we became a registered rescue with Animal Care and Control, with Bush Wildlife, with a lot of the other either sanctuaries or zoos or other rescues up and down all of Florida, all the way up as far as Orlando, by the way, and far south as Miami. And we got, there were a couple other ferret rescues, but there was only like two other ferret rescues, and they weren't sanctuaries like we were. We were the only sanctuary. But then what happened is once Animal Care and Control came here and inspected our operation, that one time after that woman had made that complaint, and they saw how big it was, and they saw our records about how many adoptions, and we only charged $35 for somebody to adopt a ferret from us. But anytime there was an adoption, they were coming out here, they decided that they wanted to start housing and adopting ferrets out on their own. So they wouldn't release them to us anymore, but they adopted the same policy they have with cats and dogs, which is if a ferret didn't get adopted within the 10 days, then they were euthanizing them again. So that was kind of heartbreaking for me that Animal Care and Control decided to take that on for the revenues and start adopting them out. But then we're also, because they're not a no-kill facility, they're not a sanctuary, any ferret that didn't get adopted out was starting to get euthanized like the over cats and dogs. So, but that's sort of what made me not need it anymore, because most people opted to drop their animals off at Animal Care and Control instead of bringing it to a rescue that wanted $35 to leave your animal with them.
Yeah, well, and always, and we've learned this in life, and we've certainly emphasized on it on the show, all things end up in the money arena. So that's too bad. But I guess I knew
that when you're talking about animal rescues, just one thing to put it out there to people. When an animal rescue asks for a donation, a lot of people think that animal rescues are money-making operations, and some are. Some people do it to make money, but that is the exception to the rule. Most people that are operating animal rescues out of their homes and stuff are doing it just because they're animal lovers, and they're working full-time jobs to be able to afford running the animal rescue, and they really need donations and volunteers. And some people gave me the $35 gladly, which is really nothing when you think about it, but some people would get so angry when I would ask for the $35, and I would say, how long would $35 feed, buy litter, support this animal? We're not even talking a month. I said, and I'm going to have this animal for years now. And it always used to shock me that people would get upset. How did they think that I bought food and litter and did all the things I did? But people don't understand that it costs money to keep animals.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I think that, as usual, people are just thinking about themselves. It's not about, it's not about you. It's about them. And, of course, we've spent a lot of time talking about that on the show, too, because that's a real human trait. And it's too bad. It's sad and too bad. But, again, when you hear the name of Animal Care and Control, you understand that they're controlling the fact that there are no loose dogs. Here's my assumption without knowing the things I know. I hear Animal Care and Control, and I think,
Yeah, they won't keep them forever. I get that. Or if it's an elderly dog and it's already sick and they put forth a little effort to see if they can make it more comfortable and then they put it down. I guess I've always realized that, and part of that is humane for me to think about. However, if they take a family pet that has been arrested, so to speak, for bad behavior, but they know that somebody else is taking care of it and loves it, and it's a part of their family, then there should be some care involved. There was a thing on the news last night or yesterday morning, might have been yesterday morning, two dogs here in the acreage. They appeared to be mixed breeds, pretty dogs. They looked like they had, you know, they were that tan color. They looked like pit bull mixes, but not by any stretch of the imagination, all pit bull. They had long noses, and they were real pretty, and they had them sitting there, and they were taking pictures of them or video of them. And apparently they got out of their yard and attacked the same little boy twice, or a boy. I don't know how little he was. Joe the kid, but and these two dogs bit the same kid twice. So I find it strange that they bit the same child. My sense of knowing people, I would say that that kid had probably been mean to them. Otherwise, why just pick out that kid and bite him twice and leave their yard to get to him? But that still doesn't make it all right, and I get that. But they're keeping those two dogs for 10 days in quarantine at Animal Care and Control, and then because these two dogs have bitten the same boy twice, they'll both be euthanized. No ifs, buts about it. And I guess part of me understands that. I'm not sure I like it, but it's not my place to like it or dislike it. I do, I guess, understand it. But again, if they had to take those dogs, and if the situation was different, they're still supposed to take care of them. They're still supposed to take care of them. And to know that they have rampant kennel cough, and nobody's doing anything about it, really bothers me. I mean, it's one thing to have something spring up in a place like that, that all the animals catch and everything. I mean, it happens in the hospital with MRSA now. But you still see the people attempting to keep things in order. My dog had 1-inch thick pads of poop on all 4 feet.
Yeah, that's poisoning them right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just without even having the, well, this is one of the things that I'm going to talk about when we talk about the factory farming, is one of the reasons that the animals become so diseased in factory farms is because they're kept in very small cages and they're basically living on top of their own excrement all day long. They're breathing in the fumes from it. It's on their, you know, it's on the bottom of their feet. So, you know, that very, very unhealthy, miserable environment. And it's one of the reasons why factory farmed animals are fed such high levels of antibiotics, which, as you and I know, breaks down the immune system. So, you know, so factory-farmed animals are really sick by the time they go to slaughter. It's a shame, and people don't know that. So it's the same effect in dog kennels. You know, these dogs are being housed in cages. They're living on, even though the cages may be cleaned once a day or whatever, there's a good part of the day that they're living on top of their own excrement, and the fumes from it, they can breathe it in. It affects their lungs. They're breathing in the fumes from other animals that are being housed near them, and this is what damages the lungs, and that's really what causes kennel cough. You're getting in diseased animals that are not quarantined away from the healthy animals, because that's not what Animal Care and Control is all about. They're going to quarantine an animal if it's suspect of biting a person, because they want to see if it shows any signs of rabies and things like that. But they don't quarantine sick animals to not get the rest of the population sick, which you think they would, and they don't. It's basically just the old-fashioned dog pound that people have a visual of in their mind. That's what animal care and control is, or whatever it's caused in other, because it's not called animal care and control all over Florida. But they do that, and they have a, you know, they have a friendlier looking lobby. It doesn't look like you're walking them to a jail cell anymore. But behind the scenes, it's still an operation that's trying to control the population of animals. So they're going to take in strays, and if they can, if they got nice healthy ones, they're going to adopt them back out to create revenues. And if they can't, they are going to summarily put them down. And it's I wouldn't be able to work at Animal Care and Control because I wouldn't be able to see constantly healthy animals being put down. It would bother me too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so on one hand, I have to put, you know, take my hats off to people that are animal lovers that choose to work there. But I think that's also another reason why some people that aren't animal lovers decide to work there, because they don't care. You know, they can deal with that, and it doesn't faze them.
Well, but, okay, now let's talk reality. Reality. You just mentioned they probably are cleaning out the cages once a day. I'm sure that's not true. But judging from my own dog, that is not true. I'm not kidding you. I don't know how Chewbacca walked, because it was like he had on 1-inch soles to his foot pad made up of.
Wow.
So there is, I mean, you know, I would venture to guess that his cage was never touched the whole 8 days that he was there.
Well, that's just negligence. I mean, I'd be shocked if that was the case, but it's certainly possible. I mean, I'm wondering what the policy is. I mean, I know people that have volunteered there, and because they were court ordered for community service or whatever, and you know, they talked about the cleaning regimen and stuff. So, but just because something is mandated doesn't mean it's done. So. I go on that.
Yeah, well, you and I both know that isn't true. You and I both
right.
know that mandate is only as good as the person that's been mandated, period. There is no, you know, there's nothing in between. But let me say this now, too, to be the devil's advocate. My dog went in for, like I said, he got arrested for biting a little kid. So maybe that enters into it. Maybe people are told, you know, be careful, that dog's a biter, or be careful this, or be careful that. And part of me also understands that. But, you know, that's still not all right, and that's still not
professional. Out of curiosity, because they do have vets at Animal Care and Control, have you called them since you brought Chewy back in the last couple of days and told him that he's getting worse and worse and worse, and is there anything else that can be done? Because the one thing I have noticed is, as much as some of the things about, you know, the pound or animal care control I don't like, there are some compassionate people there, and they may be able to offer some other solution for you. Have you called them directly to tell them?
No, I'm too angry, to be honest with you. I will. Now that you've
to see,
yeah,
if they offer any help, and
okay.
you know, they might suggest something that that we haven't thought of. I haven't had an animal kennel call in over a decade, and I don't remember what I did, but I had a similar situation up in New York. I rented an apartment, and I forgot how my dogs got out, but I got this frantic call from my landlord. My three dogs were running around the neighborhood, and by the time I got home, the police had grabbed them, and they were put in the pound up in New York, and I did get them back, and when I got them back, they all had kennel cough, and they didn't bite anybody, but they just, you know, they confiscated my dogs, and just the overnight stay they were, they ended up getting kennel cough, but I don't remember it. I remember I had to medicate all three animals But I don't remember it taking them a long time to get over it. But they also weren't there for 10 days. They were there literally overnight. And in overnight, they got sick. So it's very prevalent in dog pounds because of the way they're structured. They don't quarantine animals. They're all right next to each other. The other thing is, you said Chewy was, like, not eating well. Have you tried just giving him some boiled rice with, like, scrambled egg in it?
I tried giving him soft scrambled eggs. I will try rice. I was thinking in the middle of the night, I woke up and thought maybe I should make him some oatmeal, but keep it real watery just to
Don't do oatmeal. It's like stick to your rib enough, and it can give him, it can actually upset his stomach. Rice is very, very easy for their for their belly to digest. And at least it might stimulate, because when I almost lost Leo that time, even though he's supposed to be on a grain-free diet, the vet actually put him on boiled rice, and even though, you know, I don't like handling meat or anything, she had me take chicken and boil it and just break the chicken up into the rice a little bit and do it that way. Stay away from beef, stay away from all other meats, but you can try Publix sells. And it's not that expensive compared to the regular chicken, but Publix sells the these chicken breasts. I forgot what brand it is. It's not a name brand. I think it might even be the Publix brand, but it says no hormones, pesticide-free. So I don't know if it's organic, but at least it's free of a lot of the stuff that most factory farm chickens has. And so I would get the chicken breast, boil it up, chop it up into the rice, and he actually ate that because he went through that when he got so sick there that he had stopped eating. And that's how it took me about a day and a half of that to stimulate him, and then he started eating on his own. But at least he ate it each time. So try that with Chewy. A little bit of rice, and maybe get some of the hormone antibiotics.
Yeah, they have a whole in Publix. I know they have. Sometimes they call it organic, but a lot of times they just call it. Green or something they use to...
I think that's the one I'm talking about. I think it was called green or something. But so try that today, the chicken and the rice. Stay away from beef or any other meats for now until he starts eating on his own again and see. But it might take one or two times to finally get him going, but the rice is a lot easier for them to digest, and it might at least give them some calories to start getting some energy from.
Yeah. I should have remembered that from babies, because even babies, if you start babies off with cereal, that is the cereal that all pediatricians tell you to use first. It's never oatmeal, it's never farina, it's always rice cereal.
Right.
So,
right.
Forgotten. Yeah. So good. All right. So very controversial, this particular topic, the animal care and control, and I think that there's something that could be done to make it a little bit more humane, and I think that that's something, I know some volunteers that have worked there. One of them is a family member, and because they love animals, and they didn't want to work there anymore, and they didn't have any real particular thing to say that they found to be abusive or anything. They just said it's not nice. And I didn't delve into it because probably part of me didn't really want to know. But this has been very upsetting for me because I trust. And even at 65, I trust. So I guess you could call me a Pollyanna. But I do.
Well, the main thing with regard to this is that people, and I say this to myself also, because you know very well that when I first moved into this house, I went through a period of time where my dogs kept finding a way to get out of the backyard. It actually took me like 3 weeks to figure out where they were getting out from. But and I was very fortunate to have dogs that weren't biters, that weren't mean. So there was never any incidents other than they just kept getting out of the yard. I had to figure out how, and then I finally did. But when you own animals, especially dogs, especially big dogs, you really, really have to be very diligent to make sure that they can't get out of your property,
that they're always leashed properly, because even the most docile animal, if it comes across a child or a human being that does anything that is startling to the animal, they can snap. And once they snap, even if they don't mean to connect, if they accidentally connect with the person and their tooth breaks the skin, it's considered a bite, even if the dog didn't intend it to be a bite. So people have to be really, really careful. It always surprises me when people will be walking along and somebody else is walking a dog, and they just walk up to each other like the dogs are just going to start shaking hands. Dogs are unpredictable. I wouldn't take my dog near a stranger's dog because I wouldn't know how he would react. I wouldn't want to take that chance. Once they get into it, it's almost impossible to break them up without you getting bit. So people just have to exert a little bit of self-control and understand that animals are unpredictable and that they're wild. Just because they've been domesticated to live in your house, you still have to understand that outside of your familiar area, they're back in a wild mode, and you're not going to always be able to predict how they act. So it's up to the humans to make better decisions.
But that's really a different scenario than having them in your own home and having somebody else come in.
Well, the counterpart of that is taking responsibility for your children around animals. That's right. That's the point I was trying to get to, is that one hand is the animal owner being responsible so their animals don't get out. The other part is people that are bringing children around animals, the same understanding that animals are unpredictable, and just because your daughter can ride your big dog at your house and the dog loves it doesn't mean she can walk up to a stranger's dog and do the same thing. And I don't think that children should be made fearful of strange animals. They should be made respectful and understand, you know, this isn't our house pet. You can't go and climb on this dog's back or pull on its ear because it doesn't know you, and you may startle it and it could bite you. So I don't think the child should be scared, but I think the child should be warned not to handle other animals the way they may handle their animals at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with all of that. But again, I think that if anybody out there has any input in regard to animal care and control, like Shelley says, they ask for contributions all the time, and I know lots of my lady friends that are over the age of 60-something donate regularly to organizations like Animal Care and Control. And I think everybody should understand, and I'm not trying to badmouth them, I'm just saying that sometimes you need to kind of revamp the way you're doing things, and maybe somebody who really takes their responsibilities to heart needs to do a walkthrough every now and then. I mean, all my years in a Denny's restaurant, it used to blow me away how many people could walk in your store, if you were a part of the Denny's chain, could walk in your store at any time they wanted to. Christmas Day for breakfast is a zoo in a Denny's. They could come in that day if they wanted to and make an inspection in your kitchen, in your freezer, in and you better be clean. That part of Denny's I have always had total respect for. So, and it's true in a lot of places up north, more so than Florida, very sadly. Car places, you know, mechanic shops and things like that, to make sure that people are doing things, you know, honestly. So maybe that's something that needs to be looked into. So big topic. I think we'll probably talk about it again, because I'm going to keep looking into it. Next subject, of course, was one of our favorites, which was bullies to buddies. And I read from the workbook that I received at the seminar I went to on Monday. And I will reiterate the fact that I have been, since the first time we started talking to Izzy Kalman, very enamored by his ability to explain that when you look like you are being the turn the other cheek person, you're actually the one with the most power. And that is what trying to get across to everybody. If you can change the circumstances of something that is going to be potentially dangerous to you by saying, what are you mad at me for, or so, or, yeah, you're right, I am a little bit this way or a little bit that way. If it can keep you from having a miserable time in school, what does that mean? That means you're in charge. That means you have taken the power in that situation. The other person may be more powerful, but you have actually taken the power. And you now have the ability to change everything that's going to happen in the next 30 to 60 seconds. And I am just blown away by that whole thing because it's really who I think I try to be. So I'm very enamored by everything that Izzy had to say and everything that's in his workbook. So in the weeks to come, we are going to every Wednesday because we can't get Izzy anymore unless I change the time of the show. We are going to go through this workbook and hopefully help some people learn how to take the power back in their own lives. There are sections in this workbook that touch on family dynamics, spousal dynamics, as well as sibling dynamics, workplace. Everything is touched in this book. So if you are struggling with anything like that, Wednesday shows will, for the next several weeks, will be from Bullies to Buddies workbook by Izzy Kalman and his wife Miriam, who believe hands down in the Golden Rule. And let me tell you something, if we could all believe in the Golden Rule, really believe in it and understand it, things would be a hell of a lot better. Trust me, a hell of a lot.
You know
what,
one of the people that you had spoken to when you were talking about kind of turning things around if somebody tried to bully you or say something mean to you or whatever, and this individual got very upset and was like, well, why do I have to be the one to be nice? And one of the things to understand about that is that if somebody's doing something unkind to you and you don't react to it and you act almost friendly or compassionate towards them, you're really being nice to yourself. Because when you get upset, when you get angry, when you get threatening, if you try to stand your ground, all right, and take a stance like, you know, you're not going to bully me, these are all lower emotions. They don't feel good. They can make your heart race, your blood pressure spike. But if you stay, which, you know, this sounds kind of like martial arts, but if you can stay centered and calm, and understand that nobody can hurt you unless you provide them the opportunity to hurt you. If somebody says something mean to you and you just don't respond to it, then you weren't hurt. So by being compassionate to the other person and by staying calmer, you're actually being nicer to yourself because you're not invoking all those negative emotions. I didn't see the whole movie. Now I want to see the whole movie. But I saw a snippet of a movie with Will Smith, and he's one of my favorite actors. I love his performances. A movie called After Earth. And there was a scene in there that to this day is still getting me because it's very profound. And basically what he was saying, he was trying to teach his son not to be fearful because these creatures on this planet would find and kill humans by picking up their fear, okay? But if you didn't feel fear, you could literally walk among them and not be harmed. And he had learned that, but other people couldn't wrap their brain around it. And he was explaining to his son that it dawned on him that fear isn't real. The only place that fear exists is in our thoughts of a potential future. But it's a product of our imagination causing us to fear things that may or may never happen. So it's an anticipation. And I said, you know, that really applies to about any negative emotion we can have, worry, fear. We're considering something that may or may not happen. And for the most part, most of the things we worry actually don't happen. But we've gone through all the physical changes that worry bring about. We've suffered in that particular moment that we've allowed ourselves to worry or fear. And in the vast majority of cases, what we're worried about or what we're fearing doesn't happen anyway. But if you can stay calmer and centered, a lot of times you can think better, you can think more clearly, and you can stay more in control of a situation. It works the same way with bullying. If somebody comes up to you and bullies you, a lot of times what causes the negative reaction of the person is that they fear they're going to be harmed or they fear they're going to be made to look foolish. And so all these things are racing through their minds, and they react in a way that they think is going to either make them appear to be braver or to get them their dignity back, where if they just stayed calm and compassionate, that would get them both. It would keep them out of harm's way, and it would make them – it would actually make the bully look foolish by them not reacting. So I just thought it was a profound and brilliant assessment that he made in the movie.
Well, you know, maybe that is – I haven't seen that movie either, but maybe that is a good movie to suggest that everybody have a look at, because if you can find that lesson – in that movie, it will reinforce the things that we're talking about, because absolutely, positively, you lose your power when you become the underdog or the one that is afraid. And not that I don't think that there are times when you should be afraid, because of course I do.
Well, what he said in the movie is he's trying to teach his son so his son doesn't get killed by these things, you know. So he's trying to get his, because his son was terrified. And he says, don't misunderstand me. Danger is very real. He said, but fear is a choice. And
that's
what he was talking about. And fear, you know, if you can intellectually understand, okay, this is dangerous, so I have to be careful, but don't be fearful. And fear is what makes people act in a way that actually brings harm to them. You know, so it's not that there's not danger out there. It's not that the bully can't harm you. But if you don't act in a fearful way, it kind of disarms the bully, and they find no reason to pursue you anymore. So it puts you in the control seat, which is what we're trying to inspire people to do, to be in control of their own safety, of their own good feelings. And when you feel good, even though you've helped the bully because you've stopped them from perpetuating their own bad behavior, but you're really being kind to yourself by choosing not to give in to those emotions.
Well, and the other emotion that has a lot to do with these kind of scenarios, of course, is anger. And learning how to divvy out your anger, so to speak, is also a big asset for you personally. In
mm-hmm.
other words, choose what you really get angry about. Don't let somebody else choose it for you. And hard to do, absolutely, but it's all about, you know, thinking about it and deciding that you're in control. And I think that fear, anger, and sometimes even sadness can make us do things that that we wouldn't normally do. Those emotions are very consuming and very, very hard on your psyche, your body. Watch somebody sometime that you know is really sad, really sad. Their whole body tells you how sad they are. They hang their head. They droop their shoulders. They don't even have to be crying. They don't even have to be saying, oh, my God, I'm devastated. You can just look at them and see that they are sad. Depression, of course, can give you that same kind of demeanor, but not to the degree that true sadness can. And
right.
All of those emotions are yours. Like Shelley just said, they're yours. Nobody else should be able to control you to the degree of making you angry, fearful, sad. None of those things. They're all your emotions, and you should be taking charge of them. And I realize
right.
there are people going, oh, yeah, easy for you to say, Renee. Hey, it's a struggle for me. I can get, I have an Irish temper, and most of the time I go with the flow. You can ask anybody who knows me. But when I lose it, look out. And then I'm always angry with myself because I really don't usually want to lose it. I usually
right.
want to stay in control. And I want my behavior to be really coming from something that I made the decision about, not that somebody else did. And when somebody else can invoke you into saying hateful things, they're in charge. They are
That's
absolutely
right.
in charge. You are not. So think about that. Everybody needs to really think about who they are, what they want, what they think is important, what they think is unimportant. Now, some truisms are, it's really unimportant how somebody you really are not friends with cares about you or
True.
Feels about you. It's unimportant. Why do you care? Now, if you're being bullied by somebody you think you love, different problem, probably a different set of rules to follow. And I do think that we're going to touch on some of those things in Izzy's book. But, again, it does make things different. But if you're being picked on by somebody that's not your friend and you really don't have any time invested in this person, you should be able to take control of a scenario like that without any sweat whatsoever. So remember, if you want to be in charge and you want to have the power, it's yours for the taking. It's yours for the taking. So let's talk about yesterday's show. I read some information about factories, and one of the terminologies I didn't use yesterday, and I thought about it after Shelley and I hung up with each other, and that was the old-fashioned sweatshops. And sweatshops in a lot of our other countries, more so than the United States, but in even here, way back when, sweatshops even took, you know, like during wartime, 13 and 14, sometimes even 12-year-old girls when production came to a standstill and things like that because all of our young men were fighting in wars. Young women worked in sweatshops. And what was the name of the – I tried to remember this last night on my own, and I couldn't even think of anything to Google to get my answer, and maybe you'll remember, Shelley. Remember the movie that they made about the woman who worked in a factory, and she started
– Norma Ray?
Norma Ray. Wasn't that Sally Fields?
Yes.
Great movie. And that
yeah, great movie.
Actually talks a lot about – changing things and having enough gumption and fearlessness to want to change things. But back in that day, it was really, really bad. And things have changed, but along with the changes came heavier duty chemicals, a lot of things that are incredibly poisonous. And now we're at a different place, a different time, but the outcome is kind of the same, you know.
And unfortunately, part of the environment with a lot of these factories is that because it is a harsh physical environment in a lot of these places, it brings out harsh behavior from the managers. It's called a machine shop mentality. And I've met some people that were not unkind, but a lot of the bosses, a lot of the guys that are in charge of making sure a certain amount of production is carried out, are not reasonable with the people under their employ. There was always very vile language, cursing, they get pissed off, they throw things around, and I used to see this all the time, and when it started in New York for me, I had worked for a company that manufactured, you know, aerospace hardware, and I was shocked. We had a 150-man machine shop in the floor below the office. I worked in the office, and sometimes I'd have to walk down there to go and get something, and this guy was, like, brutal. He'd be cursing the guys out and throwing stuff at them, and I'd be like, wow, what a awful environment for these men to work in. They were treated with no respect, and that has to wear on you. And then when I worked at this other manufacturing facility just a few years ago, and I ended up leaving there, I was shocked to see that very little had changed. And here it is, what am I, 30 years later, and it's still very prevalent in that type of factory manufacturing environment where it just brings out the worst in people's behavior. The bosses are very, very unkind, very unreasonable, and can use inappropriate language and actions. You know, they get angry instead of listening to what the issue is. If they didn't meet a quota or something, they're just losing their minds. And it's not a healthy emotional place to work. And then that just makes the environmental pollution impact the body more, because these people are going to work with such stress every day with their stomach in knots. What a horrible way to go to work, being afraid of your boss. And I don't understand why bosses don't get it that's gonna give them a sick staff under them.
Well, you know, someday we're gonna have to try to amateurly analyze that, because it is funny. I know a lot of people that I love, who think that the best way to get everybody to march to their music is to be mean. And
yep.
I have never quite grasped that, ever, in my whole life. As a child, as an adult, in the workplace, assuming Shelley and I worked for somebody who's very prominent. And they think that even though they speak or sing a different song, in reality, trust is like non-existent. And because of that, there's a real sense of meanness involved. And if you run a family, if you are a part of a big family, let's don't even go to the workplace right now, a big family, you have a much tighter, a much closer, a much more, I'll carry the ladder so you can lift up your feet for a little while kind of family. If you run it with love and run it with consideration and run it with soft words instead of mean words. I'm sorry. I know there's people that are rolling their eyes at me right now, again, calling me a Pollyanna, and you may do that. But I will tell you, I have learned that you get more bees with honey, that people listen longer if you're not screaming at them, and they actually take in all the words instead of just the words that hurt them. It's just a much nicer way to run your whole life. So if you're not doing that and you think that the only way everybody's going to listen to you is if you're screaming, think again. Because even a 3-year-old child will become so accustomed to your screaming that they will shut you out for survival. They will shut you out, and they won't hear a damn thing you're telling them.
One of the things that I've seen over and over and over again in all the different businesses that I've worked in, and this is something that's really important for people to understand, is that a lot of bosses that were not effective, that were bullies, felt that if they didn't act that way, that their staff would take advantage of them, and this is how they had to act to make sure that everybody did their job. And one of them was a friend of mine, and I told her, I disagreed with her, and I said, look, I said, if you make people afraid of you and afraid of losing their job, they're only going to be loyal when they're being watched. And the minute a better situation comes from, that employee is gone, all right? So you've spent all that time training them, getting to be proficient, and then the minute they find a better situation where they don't feel they're being abused, they're going to leave. So you really have no loyalty, all right? I said, but if you make that person respect you, they don't have to like you. You don't have to invite them to your house for dinner. But if you make them respect you and you treat them with respect so that they feel good about coming to their job, number one, they're not going to be open to looking to another situation. Even if a better situation comes up with, if they're really happy with where they're working, they're not going to want to take the chance of going somewhere else unless it's extravagantly better. But they're not going to look to go somewhere else for a little bit better change, because they're happy and they feel secure where they are. Now you've created an employee that will be loyal to you and will stick it out through thick and thin, so to speak, all right? But treating somebody with respect makes them want to come to work, because people like feeling good about themselves. If you make people feel good about themselves, they're going to want to come back. If you make people feel bad about themselves and you're always riding them and you're always treating them like they're not doing a good job, number one, they're going to get emotionally and physically ill. And number two, the minute any situation presents itself, they're gone, because they're going to want to take themselves out of that discomfort and that unhappiness. So I don't understand, you know, if you're never going to get loyalty out of someone that you've made fear you or that you've made feel bad about themselves. But if you respect somebody, you will get loyalty from them. And it's a very simple concept, and I've seen it in play dozens and dozens of times. I've seen the managers that are respectful have a team under them that will not go anywhere, and they have the same people working for them for years and years and years. And then you see these guys that are obnoxious and bullies, and they have a staff under them that's just constantly turning over. I don't understand why upper management doesn't recognize that. You know, so they blame the people that keep turning over instead of the boss that can't keep a decent staff under him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's very, very right on true. And I don't know why people don't recognize that, and I don't know why people don't understand that they get a better performance out of people who are treated well than the people that are not treated well. I will never quite understand that. So we're down to just a couple minutes. I want to mention to everybody that I have partnered with somebody with a sober house, a transitional house, if you will, that's out here in the acreage. It's beautiful. If anybody is interested in finding out more about it, they can contact me. They can call me on the show. They can contact me on Facebook, or they can contact me at Reenie, R-E-E-N-I-E, dot Brewer, B-R-E-W-E-R, 91@gmail.com. I'd be happy to talk to you about it. It's a big thing if you've cleaned up your act. You need to do it transitionally. And the nice thing about this sober house is we're trying to make it green, not so green that you know, you're a diehard vegan when you walk out, but certainly green to the point where you're going to make yourself healthier and happier in the long run and replace some of your bad habits with some good ones. So let me know.
Mainly, but this particular house is only for women, correct?
Yes, it is. Only women. And next week, I want to have, Monday, we're going to talk about the animal factories with Shelley. But I also want to talk about life support. At the end of our days, there is the option of being put on life support. But I watched something on the news early this morning about a young girl who, whose, according to the hospital, brain went dead after a tonsillectomy. And now her hospital wants to take her off life support. And I'm going to research this, but I thought that a minor's responsibility in regard to life support was dependent on their parents. And there's actually a fight between the parents and this hospital. So I think it will be an interesting show. If you have any input, please call in to Renee's Heart to Heart. So go out there and have a great day, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. I hope you got all your Christmas shopping done. God bless, and we will talk with you Monday. Bye-bye. Bye, Shel.
Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Take care, Renee. I'll talk to you later.
All right, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.